This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We are moving on to our next story, and we're talking about the mental health challenges that are involved when studying overseas. This is after an opinion piece on Malaysia Kini. It explored the social and cultural stress that international students face while studying in Australia.
Yeah, so there are many aspects of an international student's struggle when they're studying overseas. And one of it is the language barrier, which can really affect your ability to do things like make friends or even understand lectures or engage in class discussions or do things like getting around and buying groceries. So if you have these language barriers, it can lead to social isolation and also loneliness, unhappiness and depression as well, because as the article points out, in Victoria alone, 27 students have committed suicide over the last 6 years.
So cultural and language barriers aside, there's also financial pressure. A three-year engineering degree in Australia costs about 85,000 ringgit per year in fees. So if your scholarship or parents' money isn't enough to cover living expenses, you'll have to juggle between working part-time, your studies, and that can add to your stress.
Just to be clear, that the opinion piece, which is written by Eric Liu, who is a Malaysian senior fellow at a university in Australia, he is talking about students from all over. So he wasn't just saying that 27 Malaysian students.
Yeah.
And issues of language, etc., face students from different countries at different levels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one would hope that Malaysian students wouldn't be too badly affected. And yet, I also know that they are by language issues. And just so that we don't think that this is some sort of, elitist story, etc., there are about 80,000, at least 80,000 Malaysians studying overseas right now, 30,000 of whom would be government students.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, Malaysia has a long history of sending students overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we think, your uncle did it, your cousin did it, off you go, no big deal. But each time, it does affect people differently, and it can be a real challenge. But just to be clear, in this room, Aiman, you studied overseas?
Yes, I studied overseas. I did my film degree in London.
And Kelvin?
Locally, full local. Never had the chance to go overseas.
Uh-huh. But one survey taken recently of local students, locally educated students, was that 73% wanted to study overseas and 72% of them never wanted to come back.
Wanted to come back.
Never wanted to come back.
Yeah, I mean, that is the appeal of being overseas, right? So you'd think that by having an international qualification, a qualification from perhaps renowned overseas universities, it will open up job opportunities for you, not just in Malaysia, but also in where you studied. So even in the UK, for example, there are opportunities for students to sort of remain for a period of time in order to look for work so that you can work there and contribute to the economy there. And that in itself is an attraction for students in Malaysia, because when you work overseas, you can earn more money and
Working in a restaurant, washing up dishes in the back, which is what you have to do sometimes because you need to earn the extra money. But what we're talking about here, though, is the
struggles that you face.
Struggles, and it cuts across the board. I remember my brother, he went to Cambridge University, and I was shocked when I went to visit him that in the first 2 weeks of when all these new students arriving, first 2 weeks, two students committed suicide.
Oh, dear.
They had worked so hard to get to Cambridge, and then the pressure, some pressure that I never understood because I never had to face that pressure, got to them, and they didn't want to go on anymore. So it's it can affect any student of any caliber at any moment. So it's something really worth thinking about, especially if, as I say, we have 80,000 Malaysians overseas. If it was happening to a community here of 80,000 people, we would consider this a very important issue.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's just trying to get at why one thing to get at is, why is it so hard sometimes to reach out? Why is it so hard to ask for help, right? If you're feeling not the best, you're not feeling 100%. Because I think the experience and having the luck and the privilege to study overseas is once that's supposed to be fun, you know, once that's supposed to be enlightening, right? It's quite hard to bring up the fact that you might actually be struggling because if you came fully on your parents' money, you don't want to worry them. You don't want to say, okay, I kind of feel really homesick and would help to come back. But either you can't afford that or you just don't want to seem like you might be spoiled or seem like you are wasting the opportunity that's provided to you. And I guess even that goes across for people who receive scholarships, right? I'm lucky enough to get this. Why am I not maximizing this supposedly fantastic experience that I'm supposed to have in here, either in the UK, Australia, or wherever?
I think based on my observations of students overseas or even international students over here, because I also attend a university here as well, people tend to sort of like stick with their fellow countrymen. So when you are overseas, you tend to look for a Malaysian, for example, because you are more familiar with the language, or you are more familiar or just feel more comfortable with people you recognize. And I think that has its pros and cons. For one thing, it doesn't encourage you to mix around with other people there, the locals there, for example. But on the other hand, being around people that you're comfortable with, that you can always communicate with, that provides a good support system because you are far, far away from your family and perhaps even your friends from high school or college or whatever. So having that support system when you are overseas can be very helpful in terms of dealing with these challenges in terms of money or looking for food or
The simple challenges,
or even like engaging in recreational activities that can help relieve stress.
So, you know, we love to hear from you. You can relate your experiences to us if you've studied overseas or if you have children studying overseas right now, or even friends. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio with how it's like and the unique struggles that come with studying abroad. After this, we will be speaking to Zulaika Mohammad of Minnakami. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:18 and we are talking about the mental health challenges that come with studying abroad. You can continue sending in your thoughts to us. But in the meantime, we are crossing over to Zulaika Mohammad, co-founder and head of creative communications at Minnakami. Zulaika, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Was this something you encountered when you were a student? What was it about being overseas that came as a shock to you?
Yeah, definitely. Living abroad was something that did take a toll on my mental health. And I guess like what came as a shock to me was how different it is to, you know, live abroad and try to figure out how the system there works, how society there works, and all of the things that come with living on your own at a different place.
And were you able to comprehend at the time that you were experiencing mental stress and what and the factors that were contributing to it?
I guess for me personally, it was something that I did think about quite in length before I went abroad. So I went abroad around 2 years ago. Now I'm back in Malaysia. But I've been struggling with mental illness since, I guess, 5 years ago. So that kind of already prepared me for, identifying when I am in a stressful situation. So, yeah, I didn't really have that much trouble figuring out that living abroad would impact me mental health wise, because I was around, I guess, 23, so I was like a lot older, and it was easier for me to understand that living abroad could be difficult for me just by, you know, listening to other people's experiences. They don't necessarily directly tell you that, yes, it'll be difficult for you, therefore you should be prepared, but like I would maybe ask someone and they would explain to me what they went through at the early stages. So I guess that's how I knew that living abroad could be difficult, yeah.
And what do you think most young people and parents don't know or fail to anticipate when it comes to studying overseas?
I think maybe one of the bigger things is how isolated you might feel, because for me personally, I studied in London, but it wasn't really at the city center. It was a bit far off. So there weren't as many Malaysians as I would have gotten to meet if I were in the city center. So I guess like when you don't anticipate isolation, you don't really know how to deal with that. So it's really, I think it would be really good to keep in mind that, you know, especially at the beginning, it might be really difficult to feel like you are able to cope there, because it can be really lonely and it can feel like you don't have anyone to turn to. But as long as from the beginning you already have the expectation and also have a sort of plan on how to go about that, I think it will be, I think you'll be, people will be much better off that way.
And did you have a plan in place, or were there people that you were able to reach out to when you were feeling distressed?
Well, I knew it was important to me to reach out as soon as I got there. So I already had sort of like a system or a plan that I needed to do in order to have as much support as I can. And one of the bigger ways is to seek out, you know, like I was in London and I knew that there were other Malaysians who would go to the same university as me. So I reached out to a few people and meet up with them as well. Other than that, I also made sure that I got in contact with the counselor at my uni in case I needed, you know, extra help.
Can you tell us a bit more about that? How beneficial was it to seek out the help of university counselors?
I think it really depends on where you're going, which country you're going. So in my case, even though, like, I guess the UK, its mental health services are very much established, so there are a lot of options. But I did go to the counselor for a few times, but I wouldn't say that it was that much helpful, because there were a lot of people who needed to go to the counselor, and that sometimes is the case as well in Malaysia that I've heard from other students. What helped me was, okay, that is something that I can do, I guess, for free. But I also did see a therapist as well privately. So I did need to pay for that. They are able to give students a concession rate. So I was able to see someone at a lower fee. But yeah, I think it is definitely an option. But I guess just keep in mind that from the beginning, you already have that list of resources that you could potentially reach out to when you need it.
And as a student, how do you know when it's time to ask for help?
I think it has to do a lot with how someone is functioning, because if a student is struggling with, you know, going to classes or feeling depressed or anxious, if they're isolating themselves a lot and not talking to a lot of people and they feel alone, things like that, it can be an indicator that they need to see someone to get help. Because once your functioning is going down, whenever you aren't able to take care of yourself or do the things that you aren't able to previously, then that is a really big indicator that you need help.
Let's talk about parents. How understanding are parents usually in situations like these?
I guess there's not really one answer to that. It really depends on the relationship with the parents. For example, if the parents trust you that you'll be able to live independently, and that if there's trouble that you would contact them, then they would definitely be more at ease. And if also you and your parents already had like a plan beforehand, like in case anything happens, please contact me. And I guess like having that set in the beginning before anything happens, that automatically makes the parents more likely to be more understanding about your situation because it's already something that you might have expected from the beginning.
So right now, there are international students here in Malaysia who might be struggling as well. Do you know what type of challenges that they face here?
I'm not really sure entirely of the situation, but I do know that one of the bigger things is like perhaps international students here, depending on their race, could face xenophobia. So a lot of students from African countries tend to struggle with, you know, locals here being anti-black and not really welcoming to African students here based on their race. Like other things that they might struggle with is fitting into the culture here, especially if they're not from an Asian country. It might be more difficult for international students to adapt to the Malaysian way of living.
So what advice might you have for students who are currently going through a hard time or maybe nervous about the prospect of going abroad?
The first thing I would say is to reach out. For me, I think it was quite daunting to reach out to people, but I also know that, you know, a lot of people struggle with adjusting to living abroad as well. So it isn't something that people need to be ashamed about or hesitant about when they need to seek help. It's not only that, but being more compassionate towards yourself is really helpful. I found that acknowledging that adjusting to life abroad is difficult was something that made me feel like that it's okay to go through that. So yeah, I think that would be like my advice to people who want to study abroad.
Zulaika, thank you so much for sharing that with us. That was Zulaika Mohammed, co-founder of Mindakami, a youth-led platform that advocates for mental health awareness. You can find out more about them at mindakami.org. You can continue sending in your thoughts, you know, whether you are a student studying abroad, whether you know someone, or you have kids studying abroad right now. What are some of the mental health challenges, emotional well-being challenges that they face? We'd like to hear from you. 7733 2900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news coming up. This is the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is almost 6:38. You are with Kelvin, Iman and Cam on the evening edition. Now, before the 6:30 news, we were talking about the mental health challenges as well as social well-being of students that are Malaysian students that are studying overseas. But I guess the conversation has expanded a bit to also include students from abroad studying here in Malaysia. We'd love to hear about your experiences, whether you've studied overseas or you know someone who has. Or if your kid right now is studying abroad, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We have an anonymous message here that recounts a personal experience. Chinese high school graduate, decent English on the papers, but spoken English was virtually non-existent. I did maths in London, so lectures weren't too much of a problem, but the rest was a bit of a struggle. I also deliberately chose to go to school without many Malaysians to force myself to immerse in others' cultures. I did end up suffering from depression in the final year of study and went through therapy. Well, the rest, as they say, is history. 1.5 decades later, if you ask me, I would do it again. And again, the experience is invaluable and the way of thinking being shaped isn't something you'd get here in Asia. I guess one just has to push through.
Actually, you know, the idea of just pushing through is something which, dare I say, people of a certain generation kind of felt, you know, I grew up in England, and we had a lot of, you know, we left Malaysia when I was very young. We had a lot of Malaysians coming through, and we, my mother was a guardian, so we had lots of Malaysians coming through the house all the time, going off to school. And one thing was, back then, you left, you couldn't call back because the telephone bills were so expensive, and you might only come back to Malaysia once a year. Possibly even once every 3 years.
When you finish your degree.
When you finish your degree. And so, you know, you just kind of just had to do it. And everyone did. Kind of pushing through was something which was, it was thrust upon you because just simply money and time and circumstances. But now perhaps if we're able to talk to people at home more easily, the homesickness in a way can be reactivated on a daily basis.
And there are also things like Malaysian societies or other clubs and societies that you can sort of like be a part of. And usually the, was it the embassy, there's like a Malaysian night or something like that, that you can sort of like just attend and be around fellow Malaysians once in a while when you feel like you need the comfort of home there.
But I mean, if you actively have chosen to make that choice to either choose a campus, choose a university, choose a campus, or even choose just to actively make those choices to actively disengage from the Malaysian diaspora that's there because you want to have a more immersive experience, then that can be a bit tough. But you're right. I think the technology does make it a lot easier to talk to friends back home if you're feeling homesick.
Well, Iman deliberately chose a place where there were no Malaysians.
I didn't deliberately choose a place.
But you ignored the few Malaysians who were there.
Cam is like misrepresenting what happened. No, the place that I went to had like only two other Malaysians in that campus who were doing some other course, media or something. So I didn't actually come across the other two Malaysians that much. So because I was practically the only Malaysian in that course, I did end up mingling and sort of like being friends with the locals and other Europeans and Asians there. And it was I had a very good time there.
You're like, all right, mate.
We also have this message here from Sai about the cost thing that you were talking about, Cam. I think it is highly, Sai says, I think it's highly linked to the sunk cost fallacy. And especially with the way the fee structures of higher education institutes are designed, the fee structure locks the student in, and not many students can afford to drop college or university subscriptions when it's not something they can handle. There's no probationary period for study, unlike internships.
That's true. That's true. It is. I didn't go to university myself, but that is the terrifying aspect, is you're about to embark on something where the turning back at, say, 3 months in, 1 year in, is catastrophic.
By that time, you spent like thousands of ringgit already.
Yeah.
And I think it's also, you know, it is several things, right? You are in that spot. The frame of mind is that, well, this is the course that's going to define my career, or at least the first few years of it. I'm not even sure if I'm making the right choice. Why am I here in this university right now? Sometimes it's also to deal with the imposter syndrome where you feel like, well, I'm not deserving of this, you know, and it's all of these things kind of mixed up together. It's like an age where the questions and the doubts in your mind are much louder than you would have been hearing them if you, say, were much older.
Sure, yeah.
You're not sure what you're doing. You're not sure how you're doing. So that adds to quite a bit of the pressure going on.
Yeah.
We also have this message here that says, studying overseas was particularly hard when I realized I had to return to Malaysia due to the lack of job opportunities. Till it depressed me knowing that I had to come back.
Oh.
it depressed me knowing I had to come back. That's all.
Yeah, I can relate to that because some people, including me, when you go out there, you do have some kind of like aspiration or some kind of hope that you can secure a job overseas. And when you do not achieve that, it can be quite demoralizing because you've already had plans and dreams of like, okay, this is the next step, next step, next step, and that's where I want to be in the end. But when that doesn't happen, it can affect you a lot. But I think that if you find yourself in that situation where you do have to return to Malaysia to get a job, that is not the end of the story. You have a whole life ahead of you where you can make decisions to still achieve your dreams.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not able to speak to the people who would be in that situation. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. It's not the end of the story. And I mean, I know everybody I know who studied overseas are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And some do stay. And get lucky, or if the case, actually, when I look at their life trajectories afterwards, they're not always the lucky ones are the ones who stayed overseas, you know.
We have this next message here from Maggie that says, I was advised by someone who studied overseas that one should be fully aware that they would be alone facing a completely different culture. Even if language, like English, was not a problem, locals behave differently from what we might see on TV. If one was not especially outgoing and was always looking for a little India or a Chinatown life, then it's a sign that we would be putting even more obstacles to settle down. I think this would also apply to rural folks coming to study or earn a living in KL.
Yeah. Good point.
And there is the important balance of being around people, not just people from your country, but also people who are there as well, just so you can have the best of both worlds. You can experience other cultures while at the same time still being in touch with your roots. And that is important in terms of dealing with all the various challenges that you will face there.
And also actually having the commonality of language can sometimes be incorrect, because you can seemingly speak the same language. You can speak the same language, but your cultural backgrounds are so different that where you seem to match in certain points, you think, oh, they're just like us, you know, just like each other. But actually there are significant differences and a lack of understanding. But, you know, if you're lucky, if you're lucky, if you're the right kind of person, then you can hopefully find the sort of people who will be understanding.
We'd like to hear your experiences, your stories about challenges that Malaysians studying abroad face. If you happen to be one, if you happen to be the parent of one, you can let us know. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin, Ayman and Cam. It is 6:51 and we've been talking about the unique mental health challenges that come from studying abroad. And of course, this involves Malaysians. And this comes after an opinion piece on Malaysia Kini explored the social and cultural stress that international students face while studying in Australia. We've been asking for your thoughts. If you yourself has experienced those challenges while you were studying abroad, if you know someone who happens to face them, you can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at PFM Radio. We have this message here from Josh, who works as an academic and guidance counsellor in a private college. He's sent over hundreds of students to universities all over the world in the past 7 years. So the message says, I try to keep in touch with many of them to see how they're doing and their progress too. The current generation seems to need more support and looking out for. I myself didn't go overseas and did it locally. With technology, we are able to be in touch more now. I've got a handful who have faced mental breakdowns, depression, and suicidal thoughts too. Thankfully, many of the overseas universities have some kind of support system, but some of our students tend to be shy to talk about their problems and feel that there is something wrong with them and not want to get help. Josh goes on to say that my advice for them is to get a good support system, find friends or people with common interests. Religious organizations have been pretty helpful too. Also, try to be real and share about the challenges and know that you are facing and know that what you're facing is not something that you face alone. I've spent a lot of time on Skype and also chats just randomly texting them to know they are thought of and can also talk to me if needed. Josh, thanks so much for sending that very thoughtful message through.
Yeah, good, Josh. It's important to keep that contact, especially for young people who are, quite apart from being overseas, struggling with just issues of just growing up and identity. And is this going to define who I am? Quite apart from anything else. So it's really important to have that connection.
And there is a good point about being shy about looking for help. Maybe there's this sense that if you look for help, then that reflects badly upon you. But always try and get some support if you need it, because Not many people have the opportunity, but if you do, you can seek support and so that you can help manage your problems.
Yeah, and I think it's also just knowing where to get help, right? Universities, especially ones that are abroad, tend to market and advertise and put up the fact that they have these services available, and that's good. But I think for international students who might be studying here instead, you know, those services might not be as easily accessible. And that's a point that Kamal is making on WhatsApp. The conversation should include students in public universities and probably in private universities and colleges here in Malaysia as well. I wonder if our universities offer effective counselling services and what sorts of challenges are faced by international students here.
Well, we have in this country at the moment about 140,000 international students. Ayman, who happens to be doing his thesis, actually, on transnational education, we have an expert here, he was telling me that the plan is to get it up to 250,000...
By 2025.
That's a huge amount of money. And yes, we do need to be sure that we have infrastructure to be able to cope with the wellness needs of that many students. I had a quick look at one of the universities, and they say they offer counseling, and they give a starter pack, and they give a lot of information for foreign students. So one can only hope. But I think that our conversation here we will be talking to right now, not so much young Malaysians who would be going overseas, because they should be in school, they should be at college overseas already if they're there, but parents, parents who are thinking about sending their children there. The numbers actually have been going up for Malaysians studying overseas, and yet there are also more options available in Malaysia for Malaysian kids to get an education here with a transnational university.
I'm not so familiar with the sort of counselling services that are provided in universities in Malaysia, but I have a friend who does work in the international office at a university here, and so he's responsible for the welfare of international students. And so in addition to the sort of counselling services that you expect, there are also things that they do where they organise trips or events or activities where they can bring in international students to go around KL, Selangor, or even Malaysia to go on trips and see all the beautiful sights, for example. And that helps in terms of, first of all, exposing them to, you know, the beauty of Malaysia and all that, but also creating this network of friends among the international student community. And I think that does go some way into helping them sort of settle down in Malaysia.
And these infrastructures are very important, right? Because if you consider the fact that if they're not available and if they are more open about seeking for help, the next obvious person they're going to reach out to are their professors or their lecturers, who, you know, while may be very, very good at what they do, they might not be as well prepared when it comes to trying to deal with mental health issues, and they might not be trained. And it goes the same across, right, for our public schooling system. Our teachers might not be ready. We also have this message here from Yo that says, I think one of the hardest things to face when venturing out on our own for the first time is facing ourselves and our bad behaviors that new people will not tolerate that our family has accepted. It's like a slap in the face, but good for us. Good to be a better person.
Wow, school of hard knocks. That one. Tough love.
Yeah, sometimes you think you're right, until you realize that you've been like, you're the kind of person who speaks loudly all the time, and that's something you have to change that people don't really like.
We also have this one last message before we head to the 7 p.m. news from Ruben that says, I was given the option from a twinning program to go to Melbourne or to go to a quiet town in Australia. I opted for the quiet town with not as many amenities readily available. It forced me to be resourceful and plan ahead for just living day to day. For example, the local supermarket, banks and so on close early, which made me plan my daily activities and chores ahead of time. Till this day, 12 years on, I still have that same mentality. Even though you can do anything with your phone, I appreciated that experience. Never take things for granted.
Cool.
You can keep your thoughts coming. We'd like to hear about the unique challenges about well-being, about mental health, or even about the day-to-day experiences that you've had as a student studying abroad. Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 7 o'clock news coming up. This is the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.